Welcome to Vashon 250. As America observes its 250th birthday, Voice of Vashon and the Vashon Heritage Museum have partnered to create our own recognition of this important milestone. We are looking back at what has happened in America since its beginning and examining how, over time, it has influenced our life on Vashon Island. In this second quarter of 2026, we continue to look at several of the famous high points that ultimately led to the Revolutionary War. I'm John Flora, and I'm joined by my colleague, resident historian, Bruce Holman. Welcome to Vashon 250 and Episode 25, The Vermont Republic and Slavery. And we have our special guest, Craig Bellis, who we'll introduce shortly. In this episode, we look at Vermont and its efforts to deal with slavery. Vermont was among the first places to abolish slavery by constitutional action. Although estimates place the number of slaves at 25 in 1770, slavery was banned outright upon the founding of Vermont in July 1777. And by further provision in its constitution, existing male slaves became free at age 21 and females at the age of 18. Vermont's legislature also created universal male suffrage by eliminating property ownership as a requirement. This provision included African American men. Vermont's July 1777 declaration was not entirely altruistic. While it did set an independent tone from the 13 colonies, the declaration's wording was vague enough to let Vermont's already established slavery practices continue. There were also inherent contradictions of the Declaration of Independence and the American Revolution to address the issue of slavery during our struggle for independence and freedom. This is all central to understanding America on this 250th birthday. Similar contradictions on Vashon about ethnic, social, and racial diversity have helped define the emerging island community. To help us understand all of this, we are fortunate to be joined by our good friend and constitutional scholar, Craig Bellis. Mr. Bellis, welcome back to Vashon 250.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be back with you, John and Bruce. Yeah, the interesting thing about this, there are many interesting things about it, but one is Vermont. A lot of people think that Vermont may have been one of the original 13 colonies, but in fact, it was not. It became the 14th state when it got around to that point in time, and it was an independent republic for a while when it had its Constitution in 1776. It spun off from New Hampshire, if I recall. But it was not shy with regards to slavery, whereas the original 13 sort of dodged and weaved that issue in several different respects. There were attempts to have limited freedoms for slaves, but oftentimes they weren't actually put into effect for another 100 years. So Vermont was way ahead of its time in that regard.
What's fascinating about Vermont is there's really two issues going on here. One is that sort of as an independent republic, how do they ultimately become part of the United States? You know, they're not part of the original 13 colonies. They set themselves up as an independent republic. And so ultimately, the United States has to find a way to bring in these new sort of territories. And that sort of defines America for the next 100, 150 years until finally Alaska and Hawaii come in. And we've sort of been settled, you know, for the last 50, 60 years. But the other part of it is slavery. And Vermont takes slavery head on. What's fascinating to me about the Declaration of Independence is in the original draft, Jefferson had a whole section. You know, the second part of the Declaration of Independence is really a list of grievances. You know, the king doesn't do this, the king doesn't do this, he doesn't treat us fairly, he taxes us, all those kind of things. Well, Jefferson had written a section of grievances about the king has allowed the enslavement of African people and their sale on our continent. That was dropped from the final version because people in the North didn't want to offend the South. the Southern colonies, and the Southern colonies didn't want to have anything about slavery in the Declaration. And then that goes on into the Constitution. We'll come back and talk about that more later. But slavery is not mentioned. The word slavery is not used in the U.S. Constitution.
Right. Not to mention the great irony that Jefferson is writing that, well, that clause with his slaves and his
yes, out in the backyard.
His girlfriend.
Yes. Oh, yes. No. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's American history is full of those kind of ironies.
Yeah.
But it's a sense of what we're dealing with here with the Vermont Republic is really two sort of issues that helped to define American history to today in terms of slavery and race, but also in terms of how do we expand the United States. I mean, right now, Guam wants to become part of the United States. Puerto Rico wants to become part of the United States. The Virgin Islands would like to become a state. I mean, you know, how do you say no?
So but as you point out, slavery was such a seminal issue.
Right.
As you'll find out in future episodes, mm-hmm. the dodging and weaving that the states went through in order to try to compromise and bring new states in, and they did some real gymnastics.
They really do, and in fact, you know, I mean, the gymnastics become so extreme. That leads to war,
right?
Civil war, you know. I mean, that's how serious the issue is, part of this sort of inception of the United States.
Right.
So over the last 250 years, since all this happened, we've had a number of independent republics that wanted to join. Arguably, at least one of them really didn't want to join and was taken over. But, Bruce, do you want to go down that laundry list, starting with Vermont?
Yeah, well, Vermont becomes an independent republic in 1777, ultimately becomes a state in 1791, you know, once the Constitution's put in place. But that leads ultimately to the passage of what is called the Northwest Ordinance. You know, we think of the Northwest as Pacific Northwest, but real Northwest was that old area.
Ohio, Wisconsin.
Yeah, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois.
The other side of the Cumberland Gap. Right.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. The Trans-Appalachian West was considered the Northwest. And we'll talk in a later episode about the Northwest Ordinance, but it set up specific procedures for territories to become states. You had to meet certain population. You had to have set up a constitution or a whole set of provisions. Then you apply, and then the Congress votes, the president signs it, and you become a state. That was not very apparent at the beginning. And we'll come back in a later episode and talk about the state of Franklin. Never heard of the state of Franklin, have you? Because it never became a state. But they applied to become a state. It was a part of Western Tennessee that applied to become a state and was never allowed to become a state. So you also have things like the Muscogee Nation, which in Florida, which was an Indian confederation, sort of combination of Cherokee and Seminole, who set up a capital in West Florida, what is now Northwest Florida. You know, and ultimately, they were an independent nation from 1799 to 1803. And then when Florida was ceded to the United States in 1821 and becomes a state in 1845, the Muscogee Nation sort of collapsed into what is now the state of Florida.
A number of these individual groups or territories, et cetera, that are kind of lost to many of us in history. I mean, we think it's pretty fairly neat deal. You had one state, Ohio join, and Missouri join, and Illinois join. You know, it ain't quite that simple.
No, yeah, it's not.
No, it can get kind of ugly at times as well.
Yeah, it was a republic called West Florida, And today we think of Northwest Florida. Northwest Florida is the panhandle of Florida. Well, this was actually southern Mississippi and Louisiana, sort of in the area of New Orleans, and they declared themselves the Republic of West Florida in 1810. And then, of course, when Louisiana became a state, they were incorporated within the state of Louisiana and just sort of crushed and disappeared. And, of course, you've got Texas, Oregon, and California.
Well, Texas is sui generis.
Right. Texas still thinks it's an independent republic, right?
Yep, it does.
But you have... behind all of these, too, is what was an issue with Vermont is slavery, you know, because as these new republics are being considered to become joined the Union, particularly, you know, in the 1830s and 1840s, the question is, are they going to be free states or slave states? And it's that balance of trying to keep the Missouri Compromise, basically, trying to keep one slave state, one free state. And that just doesn't work. It can't sort of hold itself together. In California, Craig, you may know a bit about the California Republic, but it was like a republic for 3 days. but it was a republic.
Yeah. California history is truly remarkable and unique. The mere fact that it remained one state. Was sort of a miracle. Yeah, right. Had more to do with water than anything else.
Yeah, exactly. But still does.
That's true.
It does, yeah. And we'll come back a little bit later and talk about these sort of efforts to create new states or break away from existing states. And Oregon's another great example. I mean, we think of Oregon as a state of Oregon, but the Oregon Territory was originally all of Oregon, all of Washington, all of Idaho, parts of Montana, parts of Wyoming. That was the original territory. And so when Oregon declares itself a provisional government of Oregon in 1843 and applies for statehood, the United States is confronted with, are we going to have a new state that's almost as big as the whole nation? And in effect, what they do is they divide it up and they create a territory of Washington, and then they break Idaho off, and then Montana breaks off, you know, Wyoming breaks off, and ultimately Oregon becomes a kind of a normal sized state. But at the time, you know, it was huge. And of course, the Confederacy itself is another whole concept of breaking away. You know, and that centers around the issue of slavery. So with Vermont and the Vermont Republic coming in and bringing that issue to the forefront, and then it is pushed down by the Declaration, by the Constitution, it's sort of ignored in terms of what's happening other than these kind of compromises to have one slave state, one free state. It's sort of a very interesting thing to consider, why the Confederacy actually decides to break away. And, you know, I mean, the traditional thinking is, well, it wasn't really about slavery. Well, yeah, it was really about slavery.
You mean it wasn't about state rights?
Well, there's a lawyer. Yes,
and that's part of it. Yeah. But the state's rights was all about slavery.
That's right. That's right.
We move to sort of current times, and you think about what's going on right now. And I forgot to talk about the Kingdom of Hawaii.
Mm.
You know, think about the Kingdom of Hawaii. I mean, it's an independent kingdom. You know, it declares its independence from Britain, 1795 to 1894. You know, I mean, almost 100 years, Hawaii is an independent kingdom. And then it becomes a republic after a sort of revolution sponsored by Dole Pineapple. Mm-hmm. And in 1894, it becomes a republic and then seeks to join the Union as a territory, in 1900. And for 59 years, from 1900 to 1959, Hawaii is continually petitioning to become a state. In 1959, they become, is Hawaii the 50th?
Yeah.
Or the 49th?
Yes. Alaska's 49.
49, yeah.
No, Alaska's 49, right. Hawaii's 50.
50. Yeah. Yeah. So,
but you had those sugar guys in there,
right.
And the pineapple guys, right. And they all got it's a messy history, actually.
No, exactly.
And there's still the Native Hawaiians. There's a group of them that have been working for 40 or 50 years to try and secede and become their own deal. Mm-hmm. I doubt that will ever happen. I don't know how they could run the place.
Well, yeah,
but you never know.
But it's no different than the messiness of Vermont breaking away from New Hampshire.
You know? Yeah.
You know, those things are never clean, and they're always based on issues, local issues, and local concerns, and what makes the statement, all politics are local, work.
So we, as always, we say this, but we live in conflicted times right now. Let's talk about some of the separatist movements to create separate or new states. We have them going on right now. In one form or another. So, Bruce, Craig?
Well, we do. There's the issue of Puerto Rican independence. 41% of the population's in favor of it. There's New California, Cascadia, here in the Northwest, as we refer to it now, of the United States. Efforts to split off perhaps portions, if not all, of Washington, Oregon, or the western portions of those states that have perhaps a little better political alignment than we do across state, east to west, in Washington and Oregon and Northern California.
You mean to say that those Cascade Mountains are more than just a geographical barrier?
Wow. Yes. Yes, I am. There's the whole Greater Idaho movement. 13 counties here just about a year and a half ago passed resolutions to join Idaho. And that's sort of an ongoing. And those are your Eastern Oregon counties. And then there's a couple more, a few more, isn't there, Bruce?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's, the Cascadia idea goes back to a novel called Cascadia, in which this guy in the 1960s wrote a book in which he, sort of science fiction, but that sort of Northern California, Oregon, Washington, British Columbia, broke away from Canada and the United States and formed an independent republic. And then in the novel, it was a very different kind of structure of government. But they took over the military bases, so they had their own armies to defend themselves. They set up Northern California, Washington, Oregon, British Columbia have a pretty significant economy. I mean, they'd be something like, I can't remember what it is, but they'd be something like the 7th or 8th largest economy in the world. You know, and if you added Southern California and that, it all of a sudden becomes the 3rd or 4th largest economy in the world. So, so it's significant. But the whole idea of Cascadia is built around the concept of a bioregion. So what are the things that tie Cascadia together? And it's the climate, it's the biomes, it's the plants, it's the animals, it's the economy in terms of being the resources they're extracting from the earth or from the sea. And so it's really a concept of a region sort of defining itself as a separate nation. There's been several books over the years looking at the United States as really a collection of separate nations. And you think about that in terms of, what defines the South or the Southwest or the Midwest or the Northern tier states, or New England. And it's really an interesting concept.
That does sort of beg the question, does it not, Bruce, that may have been the theory in the book. Mm-hmm. But today it seems it's much more clearly a political alignment that is causing these groups to want to gather together and go their own way. So that, I mean, there are the bio and the ecological interests that are shared in certain areas, but that's not stressed as much anymore in the current climate. No pun intended.
I was up on Salt Spring Island in BC a number of years ago now, back in my active Rotary days, and I made up at the Rotary Club on Salt Spring Island. And when the guy heard I was from the Seattle Club, he kind of poo-pooed me until I told him I lived on Vashon Island. And suddenly, I was like a buddy. And he said, you know, we all ought to get together. We have ferry problems. We have delivery problems. We have, and he goes through the whole litany. And I came home with a flag of Salt Spring Island, which I didn't realize there was one, but I have one if you ever want to see it. But
you can raise it with your Vashon flag.
I do. Right? I do. It'll probably go up this weekend, actually. But in fact, it was not so much the biomes and all the warm, but it was just kind of, we got along and we have the same problem. So maybe we can get together and solve them. And I thought it was a very interesting discussion. He was a character. But a number of the other people in that club were really interested in talking about it. They were fighting with FedEx at the time to get packages delivered on time. But, in any event, it's interesting.
But then again, you wonder what moves people to get to the point where they want to separate.
Yeah.
Not only join together, but separate. What is it that that dominates that discussion? And I think you're about to move us into the more local issues as well. And you asked that question, what is it that wants that motivates, for example, Vashon to maybe move in a different direction than King County?
But well, I you just gave the intro, so let's talk. So let's just talk about that. There is discussion periodically and has been forever about separating from King County, becoming part of Pierce or Kitsap County or Island County or whoever else. And it's usually wrapped around ferries or lack of services from the county or make your laundry list. That laundry list doesn't change a lot. It will modify over time, but we always have something to complain about, legitimately most of the time. It is an interesting discussion, and it must have been serious enough at one time that King County worked really hard to make it possible that we couldn't do it.
That's a 100-year sort of process almost. I mean, the very first time that Vashon tries to break away from King County is in the 1890s. And you've got to sort of ask yourself, well, why? I mean, Vashon's really part of King County by accident, if anything. If you look at the way the counties were laid out, King County, the southern border of King County, and the northern border of Pierce County, you know, comes through what is now Federal Way and Dash Point and that kind of area. And they just extended it westward across the Sound, which meant Vashon was in King County. But in the 1890s, Burton was the big city on Vashon. You know, all the development was oriented toward Tacoma. You know, Tacoma was the sort of heart of Vashon's economy. Seattle was just beginning to emerge. It would take 20, 30 years before Seattle sort of supplanted Burton as the center focus for Vashon Island. And so in the 1890s, there's this attempt to join Vashon with Pierce County and with Tacoma. In 1903, and I just love this, it's sort of the southern part of Vashon Island, and that goes back to a discussion we had earlier a couple episodes ago about the Mason-Dixon line and the sort of divide of Vashon, you know, across what is now Cemetery Road. But the southern part of Vashon Island actually held a vote to join Pierce County, and the vote won 56-50. So 50 people on the Vashon, this is south of the Mason-Dixon line, wanted to join Pierce County. 50 did not. But what they didn't realize, and so they had a big celebration, and they were ready. And what they didn't realize is that the sort of state constitution requires that a three-fifths vote. They would have needed 64 votes to actually break away from King County and join Pierce County. So they celebrated prematurely, if you will.
We do never like mind. Our parties.
That's right.
Exactly. And then in 1912, there was another campaign on Vashon to form a separate county through the state legislature. And, of course, the state of Washington has a procedure for creating new counties. And the Vashon County bill passed the state Senate 38-9. So they had a substantial sort of agreement in the Senate. But the state House voted no. And so the bill just sort of died in the legislative session. It never got out to the governor. In 1913, there was another attempt. The Washington State Senate votes 31-8 to create a new county. They named it Bowen County rather than Vashon County after a King County representative or senator. Bowen, who led the fight.
I'm glad you clarified that. I thought you said Boeing.
I did too.
Bowen. B-O-W-E-N. Senator Bowen, King County Senator, and loved Vashon, and he really wanted Vashon to be part of Pierce County. And so the state Senate, again, unanimously passed the bill to create a new county for Vashon Island, named Bowen County. But again, it died and never went to the governor. It died in the House. So you have continual things in the 30s and the 50s. The last attempt is in 1994 to incorporate Vashon as a city. And of course, that goes to the state Supreme Court, a group called the Vashon Island Committee for Self-Government. Gets 448 signatures to incorporate. There's a group called Sea Frog, Citizens for Rural Oriented Government, that opposed it. And actually what King County does is finally go to the state Supreme Court with it as an issue. And the court rules that Vashon cannot become a city under the State Growth Management Act because it is outside what the act defines as a designated urban growth area. And so that slams the door on Vashon ever becoming an incorporated city. And you may have plus or minus sort of ideas about that, but essentially King County uses its power and uses its legal authority in the courts to slam that door.
Well, and Craig, as I think you've noted in a previous episode, this would be a little like if the dog caught the car, if we became our own independent enterprise.
Careful of what you wish for.
Yeah, right.
Well, yeah, then you got to start paying for that new form of government.
Yeah. And
you really want to do that.
And do you really want your neighbors being the ones who are governing the island?
Yes. It is an interesting question.
Yeah. No, it all these last two events kind of grew out of the committee that the King County had created to look at the various forms of self-governance in rural areas, and this was one of them. Some of us thought there's no way that could be done legally, and others that thought they'd give it a try, and we looked at the upside and the downside, and I'm kind of happy the way things turned out.
That's good. All right, on that happy note, we'll bring this episode to a close. Our next episode, number 26, will be about the battles of Saratoga, and we'll welcome our good friend Nancy Bristow for that. So join us next time. We'll see you here on Vashon 250.
That's a wrap to this episode. Bruce and I invite you to join us again each week through the end of 2026 for interesting stories about our collective American and Vashon Island history. If you have a question, comment, or suggestions of a topic we might want to cover, please drop an email to vashon250@voiceofvashon.org. Vashon 250 is a production of Voice of Vashon and the Vashon Heritage Museum. Our producer is Truman O'Brien. Vashon 250 is sponsored by NACM Business Credit Services, a 126-year-old association focused on credit education and professional financial services for business credit departments across the nation. For more information, go to nacmbcs.org. We appreciate their support. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.